Oh, we've got a good show for you today. Good morning, everybody. Happy Good Friday. Hi, John.
Hey, happy Good Friday, Peter.
Same to you. And we have a guest in studio today.
That's right. This is a little bit of a different program for Talkback. You know, normally we have opinions that are thrown about, but today I really wanted to break out a news story and kind of bring in the human element. We have in studio today Dylan Todd. He is the brother of Shane Todd. Shane Todd was found dead. I use that quotation marks because we don't really know exactly what happened.
Sure.
In Singapore last June. Originally, it was thought that, or it was told to his family that he had committed suicide in a bathroom. But things have kind of unfolded, and it looks like he was murdered. He may have been murdered by the Chinese government or by a company that works for the Chinese government, and he may have been murdered in order to gain access to military technology. There's a lot of stuff at play in this story. But of course, you know, you can read all about that and make up your own story as to what really happened. But what we do know happened is there was a lot of shakeup in one particular Montana family. And we have a member of that family in the studio today. I'd like to welcome you, Dylan, into the studio.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Peter and John. This is a great opportunity.
All right. Now, first of all, tell us a little bit about your family, and your this is your brother we're talking about, right?
Yeah, my oldest brother, Shane Todd.
And how old was he when he died?
He was 31 when he died, but his birthday is September 5th, so it was pretty close to his 32nd birthday.
Okay. So from your perspective, give us a timeline of what happened.
Starting from when?
Well, just when your brother went to Singapore, started working there, and then, you know, he started working with a company, right?
I think in this case, it might be good to know what Shane was doing,
yeah.
Why he was even invited to Singapore. So what did Shane do in college, et cetera?
Well, Shane was one of those people that I would consider off the charts brilliant. He was a PhD in electrical engineering, and pretty much everywhere he went, people were in awe of how brilliant he was. He was constantly turning heads, so to say. So after he graduated with his PhD from the University of Santa Barbara, he went to Singapore. He was really into adventure. He loved adventure. He loved being outdoors. He loved just experiencing new things. And he went to Singapore because he just wanted an adventure. He wanted to do something new, and he wanted to see what was out there. And when he originally went there, he was working on microchips using gallium nitride, and these microchips could be used in cell phones and a lot of civilian application. So when Shane told me that he was going over there, he'd say things like, "Yeah, man, I'm gonna be able to make a." And I should probably clarify: Shane and I we are brothers. Like we didn't have a relationship that I understood that he was so smart, and he would kind of, you know, it was always just like
he didn't turn your head. In other words,
well, I loved, and I had so much appreciation for Shane for so many different reasons than him being brilliant, and so it's kind of hard. This whole story seems to just kind of focus on how smart Shane was, what he was doing. And I'm kind of like, man, this guy was really awesome for so many different reasons. And so that's kind of been difficult to kind of like.
Like your brother's been reduced in some aspect.
Yeah,
to just being a brain and not being.
Exactly.
Well, not only that, he's got the stigma of you know, a whole bunch of people believing that he committed suicide.
Yeah, and that has been difficult. And in the beginning, I mean, we heard, all of three of my brothers were we have a bed and breakfast in Marion, Montana, Cabin Creek Landing bed and breakfast. So we all woke up there, and we woke up to my mom calling my brother John, and she said, "John, do you know how to get a hold of Shane?" And John goes, "No, Mom, I know on Facebook and Skype, but that's we have to make those types of appointments." And she said, "Surely his girlfriend just messaged me on Facebook, and she said, I need to talk to you immediately. How can I get a hold of you?" And my mom said, "I'm worried something bad might have happened." And John, he was just trying to calm down. "Mom, it's going to be okay. I'm sure it's fine. You know, let's just wait till we hear from Shirley." So at that time, I was kind of just sitting around waiting to get a call back from my mom, and John and I were just sitting there. And John picked up the phone, and then I sprung out of bed and looked at him because I just saw his face drop, and he goes, Shane hung himself. And my whole life was flipped upside down at that moment. And I just got up and I was.
That was the first, your first, no way, right? I mean, because as close as you were, would he have communicated in some way that there was some sort of a problem?
Well, he did communicate that there was a problem, and I should probably tell you that after I just get out through this
okay.
real quick.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I interrupted.
I just, go ahead. So he, I couldn't believe it, and honestly, I didn't think, no way. I thought, why? And some of the criticisms that we've heard come towards us is, oh, this family doesn't want to just believe that their son or brother committed suicide.
By the way, that is a natural reaction for a family.
Yeah, no, it totally is. But we just thought, oh my gosh, you know, it didn't happen no way right away. It was just the initial reaction. I mean, when you hear that, you just, that's how it goes. I don't know. It's just, it's just an intense feeling. And my brothers all got together, and we ended up driving back to where my mom was at a different location with my grandma. And that was about 15 minutes away, and we show up there. It's so hard to even remember the things that were said in that car ride over there. But one of the things that my second oldest brother, he's now the oldest alive here on Earth. But he said, Dylan, we're gonna really have to be there for Mom right now. So let's keep it together and let's be there for her and for Grandma.
Hang on for just a second. We got to take a break here. I hate to do that because it's such a compelling story. We're going to continue with this story. I'm on the edge of my seat. I know you are as well. We're going to continue with Dylan here in just a minute. We'll be right back. And we're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, and we are right in the middle of a compelling conversation. Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, yeah, we left off the conversation. Dylan was expressing some of the emotions that were felt in his family after they found out about his brother Shane's apparent suicide. Now, shortly after this, you go to Singapore. Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the next step? So take us to Singapore and tell us what you found.
Well, from Montana, we decided within minutes we have to go right now. And it took me, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, and I threw clothes in a bag. And I said, let's go. Or we all said, let's go. We got to go get Shane back. And my dad was in the airport, in Denver airport, for 6 hours by himself. And
my goodness.
Yeah. And we felt so bad for him. But we show up in Denver, and we just all embrace each other. And my brother Chet and his wife, Corinne, had to stay back and run the bed and breakfast. And they also stayed back for my grandma. But so we show – when we were in the Denver airport, that's the first time we were, after the initial hour or so after we first heard, each one of us has expressed that individually we were all thinking, oh my goodness, there's been a lot of stuff that Shane has said to us, and I'm not sure if this is a suicide. I think it's possible that Shane might have been murdered based on the things that he's told us in the past. And that conversation first started as a family in the Denver airport. We were all sitting there, and I don't even know who said it first. My mom, she said she had called my uncle. She was talking to my Uncle Richard, and she said to him, you know, Shane hung himself, Richard. And he said, Mary, we don't want to believe something that's not true. We don't want to believe something just because we don't want to believe it's not true. But I believe that there could be some foul play here. And the reason that we all were starting to think that is because the months leading to Shane's death, some things were happening that were things that he was saying to make us think that his life was being threatened. And some of these things, one thing about Shane is he was a really hardcore Christian growing up in high school. Our family is very... we have a deep faith in God and Jesus and the Jesus of the Bible. And when Shane was in high school, he was extremely hardcore Christian. And then when he went to college, for about 11 years, he went down a path what my mom would consider a faith crisis.
Sure.
And
happens a lot.
Yeah, especially with people who are really
very
into
smart.
School.
Very, right.
Yeah, really brilliant. And So for 11 years, Shane kind of turned away from God. And in those last months, he said, "Mom, I'm worried that this project that I'll just say who Shane was working for. He was working for IME, which is the Institute of Microelectronics. And while he was working there for a while, he was doing things that were just civilian stuff, research. For a while, he wasn't worried at all. But in those last months, he said, I've been promoted to a new project. He got a big raise. He was the best employee at the company. And he said, I've got this raise, and I'm doing this new project." And he was really excited about it in the beginning. And he went to New Jersey to be trained on a machine by Vico. They make this machine where you basically grow gallium nitride on wafers. And so this is what Shane was trying to do. And gallium nitride is a semiconductor that can be used. It's used in microchips. What we use in microchips now is silicone. So silicone is, you know, it's in our cell phones, it's in our computers. That's the semiconductor that we use for our microchips. But Shane was working on gallium nitride, which is, you can... gallium nitride can withstand a lot higher temperatures, and it also can conduct electricity a lot more efficiently. So based on that, if you were using this material in a microchip, it would be a lot faster, and it could do a lot more things.
Now, this is edgy stuff. This isn't stuff we have in our cell phones yet, right?
No, exactly. It's
unsustainable at this point.
Right.
The recipe of the gallium nitride to keep it in the chip, right?
Yeah. Shane was one of the people who were about to have a major breakthrough in technology. And everyone knew that. So Shane IME and Huawei, which is a Chinese, Huawei, I'm sorry, it's hard to pronounce sometimes. Huawei is a Chinese company ran by the Chinese government. And the project that they were working on was between IME and Huawei. And they were trying to get Shane was the only one who knew how to run this Vico machine that grew gallium nitride on these wafers. And when he went to New Jersey to get trained, there's different recipes that you use using this machine, that you use while using this machine. And they couldn't send these recipes to Shane. They're very sensitive recipes because they tell you how to create certain things using material. And Shane was able to go there and write down the recipes on hand, but they couldn't give it to him. And that was a strange,
shady, sounds a little shady
thing. And Shane even told me, he was here this last, not this last Christmas, but the Christmas before. And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to New Jersey to get trained on this machine." And he explained to me the whole recipe and how he's going to get it. And I'm like, "Man, that sounds kind of shady." And he's like, "Yeah, it is a little shady, but the project that I'm working on isn't, it's, you know," he didn't understand what they were trying to get him to do until later on. So when he started meeting with Huawei more often about this project, that's when he really started saying, "I'm worried that they're trying to get me to do something that I originally didn't think that they were trying to get me to do."
Well, you can understand the secrecy, especially with a company who's trying to be proprietary and keep their stuff secret, because, you know, once that's out, then, you know, you lose it and all that research is down the drain. But go ahead.
Well, so when Shane was meeting with these guys, they started asking him questions about the gallium nitride and about the recipes related to this machine. And the questions that they were asking him, he really started to express to us that, I think they're doing something different than what I think they're doing. And I think they're trying to get me working on a project that could be detrimental for our U.S. national security.
When we get back, we'll talk about some of those national security issues, how gallium nitride might play into that. But of course, we have to take another commercial break.
We'll be right back, folks. We're back on TalkBack. And this is a little different than what we usually do. As John mentioned at the open of the show, we have Dylan Todd with us this morning. Now, let's pick up where we left off, John.
Yeah, we were just talking about this technology. It's on the cusp. It's something that's integrated into all of our devices. Right now, we use silicon chips. But your brother was working on a chip that could move even faster.
Right.
And from my understanding, from what I've read, is this might also... It might not just be for making my cell phone connect faster to Peter's when I have a story breaking, but it might do a lot more. Can you kind of tell us about what your family found out about this technology?
Well, the interesting thing, I was talking a little bit about Huawei last segment, but the interesting thing about Huawei is the thing you have to understand about them is they have been accused of spying multiple times by multiple countries. There's been a congressional investigation on this company.
Australia kicked them out, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I was just about to say that. Australia has completely banned any products that Huawei makes in their country because they spy so often on people and they just try to control things.
Now, I want to make it really clear. People don't know Huawei, but you probably do know T-Mobile. You probably have heard of the company Vodafone. All of these companies have contracts with Huawei. It's the largest communications manufacturer in the world.
But they're kind of in the background, right?
Well, they've been in the background. They only became the largest last year.
Okay.
So they're up and coming. They've been kind of in the background now. But yeah, Huawei is a huge company with its fingers in major phone, cell phone companies in all kinds of countries. So if a company like that wants to start listening to what you say, it's not that hard.
Oh, it's not hard at all, especially when they create the technology that everyone is using to communicate with each other.
Right, and Huawei doesn't consider itself a private company. It's a community company. What that means, basically.
It's owned by the communist government.
It's owned by the Chinese government.
Right, yeah.
Exactly.
So.
And so I think the reason Huawei wanted to get Shane's information so much is because they want him to create... and I think when we say military weapons, people think missiles and stuff like that, but they're not, Huawei's not into missiles. They're into spying. They're into getting information from people, and they're into everything that comes along with that.
Intelligence.
Intelligence,
gathering.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And so the thing that Shane could have created for them would have been able to infiltrate all of our communication, and basically any information that we would want to be private would become public if he was able to create what it seems like they were trying to get him to create.
Yeah. Now let's go back. Now originally, IME denied any involvement with Huawei, right?
Yeah.
So tell me let's go back with your family to Singapore. I want you to walk into the room where your brother died. Tell us what you found in that room.
Before I say that, I think it's important that we went to my parents talked to the FBI, or not the FBI, the Singapore police, right before we went to Shane's apartment, I think the day before, and the Singapore police said, Mr. and Mrs. Todd, here's a description of how your son hung himself, and it was this long, read exactly like a novel, and it said... Shane had pulleys going all over the bathroom. There, it was connected to his toilet, and then there were screw holes in his walls. And then there was a noose thrown over the bathroom door, and Shane had the noose around his neck, jumped, and that's how it happened. And we were like, I mean, you have to understand. We understand how brilliant Shane was. We're like, man, he must have really put some time and effort into this. I mean, this goes along with what Shane would do because he's. He thinks about things so thoroughly, he would want it to be done exactly right. He would do the pulleys and all of that. So we were like, whoa. And then, so the next day, we go to Shane's apartment and make a beeline for the bathroom, as we like to say. And as we were looking around the bathroom, we noticed no pulleys, not one hole. The toilet wasn't where they said it was. Nothing was there that they said it was.
Well, and you would have noticed holes in this wall. What were the walls made out of?
The walls were made out of marble, so there's no covering up a hole made in a marble wall. And then that's when my mom immediately called, or my parents immediately called the police and said, you need to come over here right now and tell me how my son actually hung himself, because what you told me isn't correct.
It's a fiction.
Exactly. And they came over and... he goes, well, we're like, where are the holes? Where are the pulleys? Why isn't the toilet where you said it was? And there was two detectives there looking at each other, and they go, well, what he could have done is put a strap around his neck and then tied a knot to it and then closed the door on it. And we're like, what? So did you, everything that you just told us before, is that a lie? Are you just trying to get us out of here? Kind of thing. And that's when we're like, this is really, really suspicious, and we really need to look into this more. And at that point, we're still so numb. We still don't know what's going on. We just lost our beloved Shane, you know. My family's so strong, and we love each other so much. So the fact that that's going on, it made it hard to try to investigate at the same time. But so we're sitting in his apartment, and I'm sitting on the chair. And this is kind of one of the points that really stick in my head, because I'm really thinking, oh my goodness, my brother was murdered, and I don't know who killed him. I have no idea. This is before the evidence of the hard drive came out, which I'll explain later is the biggest evidence that we have. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I don't know who killed my brother. I don't know if they want to kill us. I'm sitting in Singapore, the same country, the same room that my brother was killed in. And I don't know who did it. And I don't know if they're going to be coming after us or not. And at that point, three of Shane's people he worked with, colleagues, and they came over, and I didn't know who to trust. I'm sitting on this couch scrutinizing these guys, making sure that whatever they're doing is they don't do anything shady. And at one point, one of the guys I was looking at very intently the whole time, he struck me for some reason, and I didn't trust him in the beginning. And he takes my mom and says, can I talk to you back privately? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what's this guy doing? And I go, and he takes her back to my brother's room, and I'm in my brother's living room, and the door was cracked a little bit, and I'm thinking, this guy's not going to go into the room by himself with my mom. And I'm just explaining the story because just to know what kind of mental state we're all in. We don't know what's going to happen to us.
You don't know that your mom's not going to get murdered.
Exactly. Right. So I go to Shane's kitchen, and I grab the biggest knife that he has, and I stand outside the door just staring at this guy talking to my mom. And at one point, I'm just thinking, if he makes the wrong move, he's done. And at one point, I see the guy put his arms around my mom, and he looks so sad and so intent. And my mom, I see tears running down her eyes, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this guy isn't who I thought he was. And my mom comes out and says, his name was Don, and we ended up liking Don a lot. And she said, Don came up to me and said, Mary, I've been investigating. I've looked into this a little bit, and your son did not commit suicide, and you need to make sure you investigate this until the end. And that's what he was saying to my mom as I was standing outside the door with a knife.
We're going to take a break.
Wow.
We'll hurry through as quick as we can. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Talk Back continues. About 20, 25 minutes left in the show. I really want to get more into this story. So, John, why don't you pick it up here?
Yeah, we were just in the hotel room. Man, that your
Shane's
brother,
room. Shane's room.
Oh, I'm sorry. Shane's room, yes. In Shane's hotel room in Singapore, a man who used to work with Shane came and told your mom that he thought that your brother was murdered. Your mother already thinks that your brother might have been murdered because the setup that the police told you was going to be, or that was used to hang himself, wasn't in the room, and it was impossible to have done in the bathroom as the way the bathroom was when you found it.
Right.
Tell us more about that room and what you found in that room.
Well, the interesting thing was is Shane was supposed to be back in the United States in 4 days. The day that he died, or the day that he was killed, was his last day of work. And he had all over his apartment. He had a TV and furniture, and it just looked like a normal apartment. But all of his furniture and all of his stuff had price tags on them for what he wanted to sell them to, or for what he wanted to sell them for. And the people, his next door neighbors, were telling us that he was coming over and haggling with them, like, oh, I'll give you my bike too if you take the TV for this amount. And that's just the type of guy Shane was. So things like that were going on, and we just thought, oh yeah, is a guy trying to do that right before he commits suicide?
Now, was he laid off? Did he did his contract expire, or did he quit? I mean, what was the separation between him and IME?
Well, when Shane originally started telling us that he was worried about this project he was working on, he said, I might have to quit. I might have to leave here. I'm not going to do this, what they're trying to get me to do. And then after he really made that decision, I'm quitting, he put it in his notice. And then they offered him a ton of money to stay. And they offered him all these incentives to stay. And he says, I'm not going to do what you guys are trying to get me to do. And I think all the way up until that last day of Shane working at IME, they were trying to get him to stay. And all the way up until that last day, he was saying no. And that's when that night he was killed.
The day he quit.
Yeah, the day he quit. And, well, we honestly don't know the exact day. It's either it's the night of the 22nd or the early morning in the 23rd. But, yeah, so.
And from my understanding, you don't even know where he was killed.
No.
they told you it was in the bathroom, but they told you lots of stuff you don't believe.
Could have been almost anywhere.
They've told us so much stuff that's not true. And one other thing about I want to say about Huawei again, I don't want to forget this, is when this first kind of came out and we said we had concerns that Shane was murdered, Huawei said in the beginning, we've never had any communication with Shane Todd. We've never done any project with him, any classified project. And that's true. The project he was working on wasn't classified, but the project he was working on was different than he originally thought it was. So and he was the connection between these special recipes and this machine.
So explain to us what you found in the room that links Huawei and IME.
Well, okay, this is the biggest evidence that we have, which is the only reason our government is so involved, is we found Shane's external hard drive in his apartment. The police have obviously, they took his computers. They had two computers. They took his cell phone. They took his diary. They didn't let us see any of it. And
Still,
yes. We haven't seen it. Well, they showed his diary to my parents in the while we were in Singapore, and they also showed a suicide note that was supposedly on Shane's computer, which I'll also talk about in a bit. But the biggest evidence that we have was that external hard drive, and they missed it, and they left it in the apartment. And my mom originally picked it up and said, hey, Rick, which is my dad's name. Hey, Rick, could the boys use this? It looks like a speaker or something. He's like, we're all just numb, you know, and just throw in the bag. You know, we'll take care of it when we get home. And so that... While my mom was in communication with my uncle again, he said, Mary, don't touch that hard drive. I have a guy named Ash Masood, and he works for Data Chasers, which is he's a computer analyst, like a forensic computer analyst, and he's the one that was able to get the most poignant evidence that we have, which is Shane's computer was accessed two times after his death. Obviously not by him because he was dead. And once June 23rd at 3:39 a.m., which is after his death, and also once June 27th at 5:50 p.m., which is the day before we as a family were showing up to Shane's apartment. And the files that were accessed weren't normal files. The files that were accessed said plans that we have for plans between IME and Huawei to make whatever they were trying to make. And when Huawei originally said, we had no communication with Shane, never worked on a project, never did anything, after this came out that Shane had on his computer plans to work with Huawei, then they said, oh, well, we worked with Shane, or we talked about a project with Shane, but we decided to not go along with that project anymore. We decided to cut it off. And crazy, right?
They got to rewrite the story to match the facts.
Yeah, and so they've changed their story multiple times, and that's one thing we haven't done as a family. We haven't changed our story once. We're willing to take lie detector tests as long as they're willing to take lie detector tests, and we'll say that to the end.
Now, we're about a minute from another quick break here. Now, your communication has gone, as far as we know, as high as Senators Baucus and Tester, perhaps all the way to Secretary of State Kerry. Is that right?
Oh, not perhaps, without a doubt.
Okay.
Secretary of State Kerry, he's already flown to Singapore to meet with, I don't know if he's flown to Singapore, but he's met with the equivalent of their Secretary
of
State.
There's quite a few more steps before we get there.
Right,
We've got the forensic computer analyst that volunteers his time, right? Pro bono.
Yes.
And he's just one of many steps of people that, you know, went out to help this family, did it for free, and the big one's coming, because you don't really have a story until the world knows you have a story.
Right.
And I really think we need to talk a little bit about how this story broke the news and how the article Death of Singapore, how that got written.
Okay, we're going to come right back. And this is absolutely fascinating, and I wish we could go, you know, for the rest of the morning. We only have like 20 minutes, so we'll be right back with more with Dylan Todd here in just a second. All right, we're back on TalkBack, 721-1290, 1-800-568-5309. We're talking with Dylan Todd about the death of his brother and in Singapore. And, of course, it's been in the news a lot. So let's talk about how it got in the news in the first place, John.
Yeah, you have a Pulitzer Prize-winning author take up this case. Tell us how that happened. This is what kind of broke the news for everybody, right?
Right, yeah, without a doubt. Before this article, my parents were the main investigators for the whole thing. They gathered all this evidence that has now been recognized that this evidence is real, and they were the ones that gathered it all. But my dad grew up on a street in California with a lot of friends, and one of them was named Brian Manning, and he would play golf with Ray Bonner, who's the one that he's the private investigator for this. He's the one that wrote the article. And they would play golf, and just many years ago, and when Brian Manning found out about this, he called my dad and said, "Hey, I have a resource, Ray Bonner, and you guys should be in contact." And that's how that happened.
Yeah, if you don't know who Ray Bonner is, he broke the El Mozote massacre back in 1981. This is before I was born. I had to go research it, but a lot of my listenership probably remembers it. Anyway, this is the story about those villages that were killed, and our government under the Reagan administration was kind of supporting the government that did these massacres. So there was kind of some political play to it. Sure. This guy lost his job, but right. Later it was proven that there were murders there, mass murders. And anyway, he's obviously a guy that's willing to say the truth, even though he could get in trouble for it. And
oh, yeah.
He took up your story. And the story is called Death in Singapore. I have it linked in the article that I wrote about you coming on the Talkback Show today, if anyone wants to read it. But it's very enlightening. It goes over everything that we have up to now. But after this story, a lot of other people start contributing their efforts towards the cause. So tell us about some of the other people that have donated pro bono work and what they've found, these experts.
Well, Ash Massoud is the biggest one. He's the one that cracked the hard drive, and he's the one that, you know, was able to discover the biggest evidence that we have, according to our government. But according to me, and my personally, the biggest evidence for me is Dr. Odelstein, which is he's a forensic pathologist in Missouri, I believe. And he was sent the picture. All sorts of pictures were taken of Shane's body after he was dead. And we sent the pictures of his body and also his autopsy report and everything. And he said, based on the amount of fluid in his lungs, it takes 6 minutes to hang yourself. And it takes 15 seconds when you're being garroted, when you pass out, and then you die within 30 seconds after that. So based on the different times that it takes to do both, you have a certain amount of fluid in your lungs. And the amount of fluid that Shane had hidden in his lungs was consistent with garroting, not being hung.
Now, do you have a body, or did they incinerate the body?
No,
they usually burn in
Singapore? We got Shane back, and he's in California right now, where we all grew up. So, okay. Yeah, that was really awesome that we were able to get him back. It was really hard, but we did it. And so Dr. Odelstein also looked at the marks on Shane's neck, and the difference between when you get garroted and when you hang yourself, the marks on your neck are way different. And he said the marks go straight across Shane's neck, so that comes from a guy right behind you choking you. And also when you hang yourself, the marks go in a V up your neck, and Shane's was right across. And he said, you know, based on all this evidence,
that's physically impossible.
Yeah, he was garroted. He didn't hang himself. And so that to me was the biggest evidence. And the one thing that I think is very interesting is the Singapore police have now said, they just came out recently and said, we have two forensic pathologists from the United States who agree with our conclusion that Shane committed suicide, but they don't give any of the names of these forensic pathologists. And when they were asked for them, they said, oh, we'll get those to you later.
Yeah, we'll let you know as soon as we make them up.
Yeah, so you just think, man, are we dealing with a bunch of elementary?
Well, it just sounds like a really bad spy story.
Right. I think what they—
very amateurish.
What happened was this company and this Huawei and the Chinese government, they're so powerful and they have such a big ego that they think if someone's going to try to bring shame upon us or not do something that we say we're going to do, we're just going to kill them, and that's how it's going to go. And
they'll do it with impunity.
Yeah, and yeah, nothing's going to happen to us, and we're going to do it just because we want. But
the other problem, I think, in this case is they have to work through surrogates. If they actually go and do the work themselves, because they're maybe used to this kind of work, if they go and do it, then they automatically implicate themselves. Huawei doesn't want to be connected. The Chinese government doesn't want to be connected to IME. So they have to let Singapore deal with this problem. They can threaten Singapore to do it correctly. But if Singapore is not as used to international espionage as China and Huawei are, they're going to make mistakes, as they've done over and over and over again.
Yeah, definitely. And The next big thing that's coming up is the coroner's inquiry on May 13th, which is we're going to go to Singapore as a family, and we're going to bring some people and some witnesses. And we present all of our evidence to a coroner, and we say, this is why we think Shane was murdered. And then the police present all of their evidence to the coroner, and they said, this is why we believe Shane committed suicide. And then the coroner is supposed to make an independent decision on whether he thinks he committed suicide or not. And then that's supposed to be the conclusion. But the problem is Singapore is run like a kingdom. It's not run like a democracy how we have. So they tell
the, it's an island nation, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. It's an island. It's a really small country, but they do a lot of research and but
it's extremely wealthy.
Oh yeah. 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 And so these the minister of this place can say directly to the coroner, I don't care what the evidence is, Shane committed suicide. And that coroner, if he doesn't do what he's told, then he's going to be the next one committing suicide. So if you know what I'm getting at. And so basically we don't have a lot of hope that after this coroner's inquiry is going to be fair. And we've heard, after this story has come out, we've heard from multiple people. My son was murdered in Singapore and it was set up like a suicide. My son was murdered in China and it was set up like he got hit by a car. And then they all found out later by getting a forensic pathologist to look at the body in the autopsy, and each one of them was, oh, he didn't commit suicide. So this is not the first time that's happened. This is not the last time it's going to happen, and this is why I'm here, because I want people to know. And this is why my whole family has been wants the story out, because we want people to know. We want the next, electrical engineer who's brilliant, who has all this opportunity, to know that there's evil in other places in the world, and this kind of thing can happen to you. So make sure you're careful, because, I mean, we're not going to be Shane back. We're not trying to do that. We're just trying to warn people, and we're trying to let our government know that there's evil out there doing this to our citizens.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want you to tell me, because we'll have about 8 minutes left in the show,
Okay. Where
we go from here. I want to hear about what our government is doing, if anything, who's getting on board to help you and your family, from especially our Montana congressional delegation, see where they're at, and who else higher up, because this is definitely something that you I think you've opened up the lid on some really nasty stuff.
Without a doubt.
So we'll be right back with more in a minute. We're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number, but we haven't taken a single call, and we're not going to, because this is a compelling story, and we only have a few minutes to wrap it up. So.
Yeah. So we have the evidence. The evidence is mounting. Tell us where the U.S. government steps in and where we're going from now.
Well, after the article came out, a bunch of other articles came out, and then eventually the government started getting involved in and Senator Baucus got in touch with my parents originally, and he was the one that said, hey, I'm going to get to the bottom of this no matter what. And he promised that to my parents. And then John Tester has also gotten involved now. And what they did together, there are two Montana senators. And what they did together was propose an amendment to block all funding to IME, because our government gives them money to research.
Big time.
Yeah. So
of course we do.
Yeah. So they proposed an amendment to block all funding to IME until they gave us his computers, because they weren't giving us. The FBI asked the Singapore police multiple times, hey, can we be involved in this investigation? And they said no every time. And then once the story came out and all this bad press was on them, then when that amendment was proposed, then they finally said, okay, fine. And the police now, our FBI now do have Shane's computers and his diary, but we haven't been, us as a family haven't heard any conclusions from that. But
and have they been wiped? We don't know.
We don't know anything. Yeah. Yeah. Right. We don't know if it was wiped and then a brand new hard drive was put in there to like look a lot of other things. We don't know what they're capable of.
So the bill was just a gesture. It never passed?
I don't know that if it was, because I think it was just putting pressure on the police to allow the FBI to be in. And now that the FBI is in, I don't know what's going to happen with that. But also John Kerry, our Secretary of State, has taken this very seriously, and he has met with the equivalent of Singapore's Secretary of State and talked about it. And the unfortunate thing for us is we don't really get to know the details of how those conversations go down. But and another interesting thing is the Prime Minister of Singapore is going to be in Washington, D.C. next year, or next month. That's what I'm told. And I don't think that that's a coincidence.
So he'll be in Washington, D.C., fleshing things out with someone important.
Right, yeah. Who knows how this conversation's going to go
down. Let me ask you this. First of all, thank you for telling your story. It is...
Thank you so much for having me. I'm here to get the story out there.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's believable, but it's unbelievable. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I would like to know from you, in your opinion, because you've been really close to this from the very beginning, how many layers do you think there are to go here? I mean, because we've gotten down to, you know, Huawei, we've gotten down to the computer company. We've got maybe, do you think it's going to go as far as the Chinese government, or is this something that you think people are willing to pursue to wherever it leads?
That's a great question. I think there's multiple layers to this. There's so many secrets that we haven't found out yet. There's so much things that could be found out. But
and like the key lies in what he was working on.
Right. And what they were trying to get him to do, I think, is when the key lies. What they were trying to get him to do with those recipes, he was the only one who knew how to use those recipes with the machine. So they had to have him to get what they wanted to get done. But once he realized what they were trying to get him to do, he said, no way, I'm not going to do this to our country.
Did he ever say that he thought it was for military purposes? Or is that something that was figured out later?
Yeah.
He said, he didn't say, I feel like I'm doing something that is for military purposes. But he did say, I feel like what they're trying to get me to do could be detrimental to our U.S. government. So it wasn't specifically, working on military technology. Well, from the best of what I know.
Espionage would, you know, that makes a lot of sense. That's a very strong statement for someone to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could totally see that. So tell me, you have May 13th is the thing we found out this week is when the coroner's inquest is, right, in Singapore?
Yeah.
So you'll be flying there May 13th?
Yeah, May 13th, which is round finals. So I'm going to be, school's going to be pretty gnarly for me.
Well, we'd love a call. Tell us what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to come here and let you guys know it happens again if you're willing to have me back.
We'll dedicate a 90-minute show, seriously, because the show is ordinarily 90 minutes. And we would love to have you. If you want to bring in other members of your family, we'd love to have them on too, if it's possible.
I hate to brag
here, other people.
I hate to brag here, but my family is amazing, and I love them all so much, and they're all so interesting to listen to. So I think it'd be super awesome if they'd be willing to come here to hear their story as well. This is just my version.
Yeah, and just so the audience knows, you can see video of them on Fox, on CBS.
Right.
On
oh, yeah.
CNN. Right, this story is, although Dylan was great and willing to come onto a local station, it's a national story. It's an international story.
It is.
I encourage everyone to look at it up. Look at what's happening. Try to figure it out for yourself. Look at the evidence. Come up with your own conclusions.
And, you know, I think sometimes it's a little scary for those of us who are naively, you know, driving back and forth to work. We got our, you know, noses buried in our stuff.
Right.
But it's a little difficult to realize that America has some really, really bad enemies that really want our stuff and will do anything to get it.
Uh-huh.
And including, it looks like murder,
right,
you know, lying, conspiracy, spying, you name it.
Yeah, so, and if that, if it is as it looks, I think a lot of credit needs to go to Shane. Because a lot of people, are out there that take that paycheck when it's offered.
Oh, yeah.
And don't give a second consideration for the rest of the country.
Oh, yeah. And Shane, I'll say it again, and I'll say it until the day I die. Shane was an amazing person for so many different reasons. And the reason I'm here is because I love him so much, and I'll spend the rest of my life preaching this story. And I just want people to know that this happened to my brother, and he's not an ordinary guy.
So let me ask you this. What, looking toward, we have like exactly 1 minute left in the show. So in your view, what would be the best outcome for this when all is said and done?
I think the best outcome would be just so the whole world knows that this happened to my brother. And I also, the best outcome for me is I want to know exactly what they were trying to get him to do. And I want to know what my brother saved our country from getting into, because he could potentially be saving multiple lives. He could be saving our national security. And I want to know exactly what Shane was saving, who he's saving, and the impact that he would have had if he decided to take that money.
Sure. I'd like to see the political ramifications on Huawei in China.
I agree.
I think Baucus and Tester stopped too short. I mean, yes, we have the data back, but why are we still giving this company money? Why do we know that they won't do it again?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I don't mean to be melodramatic here, but I think your brother's a hero.
Oh, I Shane, his gravestone's going to say Shane Todd, an American hero.
Thanks for sharing this.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. This has been awesome.
It's been very moving. So
I'm glad, and I hope that everyone else feels that way too.
All right. Okay. Well, looking ahead, first of all, happy Good Friday, everybody. Hope you have a wonderful and blessed Easter. And what's coming up on Monday?
Open phones.
Open phones. All right. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. You guys have a great Easter. We'll see you later.